拜登总统与第一夫人发表感恩节讲话。美国右翼议员访问团即将抵台，一月两次，凸显对台支持。华裔工程师分享美国南方寻根之旅，排华法案影响深远。各位观众，大家好，我是卡拉，欢迎收看《美国观察》。周四是美国的感恩节，拜登总统和第一夫人吉尔·拜登发表讲话，祝福美国的民众节日快乐。另外，美国国会众议院的五名议员在周五已经抵达台湾来进行访问，拜会蔡英文总统和台湾国防部，这也将是美国国会议员本月第二次访问台湾。在今天的节目中，我们会为您继续关注。美国观察的节目热线已经开通，欢迎您拨打0021-2022-920-4990给我们留言，与我们分享您对节目的看法，告诉我们您希望看到的节目内容。在周四感恩节这一天，拜登总统和第一夫人吉尔·拜登发表讲话，祝美国民众感恩节快乐，也对那些不能团聚的军人家庭或失去亲人的家庭表达慰问。
Thanksgiving, everyone. This is always a special time in America, but this year, the blessings of Thanksgiving are especially meaningful.
After being apart last year, we have a new appreciation for those little moments we can't plan or replicate. The music of laughter in a warm, full kitchen, the thump of small feet making big sounds, the circle of faces crowded around our dining room table, glowing in the candlelight.
You know, as we gather together again, our table and our hearts are full of grace and gratitude for all those we love. And as Commander-in-Chief, I'm especially grateful to our service members and their families for the sacrifices to our nation.
While we celebrate together, many of those military families will be apart from their loved ones. Whether your spouse is deployed or you've settled into yet another base,The holidays just aren't the same without the people and the communities that make this holiday special. We are so grateful for your service.
As we give thanks for what we have, we also keep in our hearts those who we lost and those who have lost so much, and those who have an empty seat at their kitchen table or their dining room table this year because of this virus or another cruel twist of fate or accident. We pray for them.
As Joe and I have traveled this year, we have seen and been so inspired by the unbreakable threads that unite us all, family and faith, kindness and compassion, a love for this country we call home.
You make us so proud every day to serve as your President and First Lady. And from the Biden family to yours, happy Thanksgiving, God bless you, and may God protect our troops and their families.
美国国会众议院的五名议员在当地时间周五抵达台湾进行访问，会晤台湾总统蔡英文和台湾国防部的官员。美国议员代表团的成员包括民主党籍众议员塔卡诺、奥尔雷德、斯洛特金和雅各布斯，以及共和党籍众议员梅斯等人。他们分别为众院退伍军人事务委员会、军事委员会、外交委员会的成员。据台湾媒体中央社周四报道，美国议员计划在台湾停留2至3天，主要拜会台湾国防部，就国防相关议题交换意见。台湾总统蔡英文也将接见访问团成员，这是美国国会议员本月第二次访问台湾。美国访问洪都拉斯的代表团表示，美国希望洪都拉斯维持与台湾的邦交。美国国务院一名高级官员星期三说，正在洪都拉斯进行访问的美国代表团已经对洪都拉斯11月28号总统选举中的两名主要候选人明确表示了以上的希望，并就中国与当地接触的有关一些风险向洪都拉斯提出了警告。洪都拉斯是台湾的15个邦交国之一。陪审团周三判定佐治亚州3名白人男子谋杀一名年轻的非裔美国人的罪名成立。法官宣读了裁决之后，法庭外的民众表现亢奋。 65岁的格雷格·麦克迈克尔，他35岁的儿子特拉维斯·麦克迈克尔和52岁的邻居威兰·罗迪·布莱恩被控2020年2月在佐治亚州的布朗斯维克城外追杀25岁的阿莫德·阿贝里。三名被告作出无罪申辩，检方则抨击了辩方的自卫说法。检方提到是被告主动挑起与阿贝里的对峙。欢迎继续收看《美国观察》。在加州长大的华裔工程师赵宝荣，40多年来一直以为自己是家族里第一个在美国出生的人。一天，赵宝荣意外地发现了一张老照片，他的祖父竟然埋葬在一家人从未到访的美国南部路易斯安那州。最近推出的纪录片记下了赵宝荣带着家人到南方寻根，进而意识到排华法案对家族历史的深远影响，也包括自己从未见到祖父的原因。来看美国之音和赵宝荣夫妇的独家专访。
One day we came across this photo of a gravestone, and that's when my dad finally told us that this is where my grandfather and great-grandfather were buried. But not in China, in Mississippi.
纪录片《Far East Deep South》主角赵宝荣因为一张老照片对家族历史感到好奇。在加州出生长大的他，与父亲踏上前往密西西比州的寻根之旅，试图找出埋葬了父子俩从未谋面的祖父和曾祖父的墓地，以及家族在美中两国迁徙的故事。他惊讶地发现，这个位于美国南部的小镇还曾有一段祖父串起的亚裔与非裔共筑友谊的故事。
Deep South is a story about Baldwin's own family roots. Please give us a brief storyline of your family from Guangdong to the U.S. and how they settled down in Mississippi Delta and went up to Sacramento area. What are the different drives behind these migrations?
Yeah, thanks for having us. And it's actually kind of a two-part story, so maybe I'll let you start with the beginning.
Well, Baldwin's family is from Sunhui in Cantonese, Xinhui, China, and in the Guangdong province. And so we're going to have to spoil the film a little bit. So growing up, Baldwin did not know anything about his father's side of the family. But we do know his great-great-grandparents were born there. And then at some point, they came over to the United States to San Francisco. And then his great-grandfather was born in the United States. And then his great-grandfather ended up moving down to Louisiana, to New Orleans and the Baton Rouge area, before going up to Mississippi. He went to Memphis first in Tennessee, and then went to different cities in Mississippi before settling down in Pace, Mississippi, which is where he had his grocery store to the end of his life. Now, where it gets complicated is then Baldwin's great-grandfather, he was in Mississippi, but because of the Chinese Exclusion Act, it was very difficult to find a wife here in the United States. And so he had to go back to China to actually find a wife, have a family. And eventually he was able to bring his family back to the United States. And the pattern was repeated again for Baldwin's grandfather because of the Chinese Exclusion Act and other very restrictive immigration laws. He went back to China to have a family. That was how your father was born.
Right. And so when my father was finally born, he was also born in China. So he should have been born in the U.S., but he wasn't, like Larissa said, because of the Chinese Exclusion Act. My father eventually came over in the 50s, early 50s, 1952.
Two to be exact, yes.
And that was because, and it was difficult in that sense, too, because a special bill had to be created in order to get him to come over, even though he was already legally able to come over. Once again, kind of the consequences of the Chinese Exclusion Act.
How about you, Larissa? Could you share with us your family migration curve and how it overlaps with Baldwin's?
Well, my parents have a very different story. My father's family was originally from Zhongshan, and he and my I guess my grandfather ended up doing business in Shanghai. So my father's side of the family, even though they're Cantonese, they are actually, they were born in Shanghai. My mom was also born in Shanghai. And so my grandfather is from Suzhou and my grandmother is from Ningbo. And so, you know, I think it was around 1949, they ended up going to Hong Kong. And from Hong Kong, they came to the United States, or at least my mom and my dad came to the United States as graduate students in the 1960s. So a little bit different in terms of the reasons why they came, but certainly they, at least your mom was from, you know, came over from Hong Kong as well. But they definitely had a little overlap, but
right.
somewhat.
But different, but, you know, different experiences, but similar in experiences as far as how it felt like to be a first-time immigrant to the U.S.
Please summarize the storyline of Far East Deep South. For Baldwin's ancestors, how could they deal with the obvious racism, segregation, loneliness, depression, and financial burdens?
7 years ago, we took a trip to Mississippi for the first time because Baldwin didn't know anything about his father's side of the family. And all we knew was we found a picture of a gravestone.
And we knew that we had to go to Mississippi to find out where it was. That's where we eventually learned that this gravestone was. It was in Mississippi.
And that was of your grandfather and your great-grandfather.
Right. And we had no idea about that. And we're like, why were they in Mississippi? Because we told you earlier, you know, even though we have a long lineage in this country, we did not know that until just recently. In fact, I thought most of my life I was the first one born. In the United States. So these are the things that we went to Mississippi for in order to find out and learn more about. And we discovered this history that we were never taught growing up. And we found out that there was a strong and a relatively large population of Chinese in Mississippi living in the Black community, still under the same laws of segregation, Jim Crow, in addition to the Chinese Exclusion Act era. So all those things made us really kind of discover a new story behind our own American lineage and identity. And that's how we felt like we needed to make this film.
Right. And so the film follows our journey in discovery. So the film follows our journey of discovery in Mississippi and our personal family discoveries and also the history of the Chinese in the Mississippi Delta during segregation. Mm.
And tell us about Chinese community's bridge function between whites and blacks down in Mississippi. We understand that the racial relations could be tense sometimes in that time period. Why is it important for current and future generation to know about this part of history for Chinese Americans?
Yeah, I mean, certainly it was a different era back then than today. We found that, you know, Chinese really were stuck between black and white. They really didn't know where they belonged many of the times. And I think for us to find out and learn that they were able to find ways to kind of live together, even though there were definitely a lot harsher climates as far as race goes and racism went. But for today, we feel like, you know, because we didn't learn about that history, because we don't know about our own history, we tend to continue to see each other as foreign. We continue to see each other as not belonging in America. We tend to see different races and different groups of people as separate rather than united. And I think that's why we felt like, you know, this story had to be told. We could definitely learn from our past to learn that we had common ground, even though they may have been harsh. And those common grounds kind of kept us together.
Well, and to kind of talk a little bit more about the racism, I think that the Chinese community experienced in the South, you know, I think any person of color and at that time, pretty much if you were not white, you were basically kind of outcast and you were treated as a second class citizen. And in our research for our film and interviewing different people, we even talked to members of the Black community who had told us when the Chinese first came in the 1800s, they were actually treated even worse than the Black community. And it was only over time that they slowly gained a little bit more favor. But even then, you know, they still were not treated as equal as the white community. You know, certainly they were not allowed to live in the white neighborhoods. They were not allowed to own property. They were not allowed to go to schools with the white children. And sometimes they were not even allowed to go to the school with black children. They had to have their own separate mission school. We heard from many of the Chinese who grew up in the Mississippi Delta, there was discrimination in terms of being turned away for medical services. One man we talked to said their family couldn't even get a haircut at an establishment because they...
Or go swimming
because they were refused service. And the reality is, you know, one thing we showed in our film is even cemeteries. You could not even be buried in a cemetery with anyone else besides your own race. And so they had to actually establish a separate cemetery for the Chinese. So the racism definitely ran deep. The segregation ran deep. And so a lot of the Chinese felt isolation, I think, on an individual basis. But as a community, they would gather together and they would have these banquets and they would have parties just to have that community because they were kind of shut out from the rest of the society.
And that's really how they were able to make it, is really they had to depend on each other. They had to grow together and realize that they had to, in order to do things, they couldn't do them separately.
Yeah, and I think furthermore about the racial relationship between the Black and the Chinese community, I think the thing that was very eye-opening for us is that you know, I grew up in Los Angeles, and even current day, I mean, we know the more recent history in the larger cities, there's been a lot more tension between the Black and the Asian communities. And, you know, for us to discover back in the, you know, 1900s, even going back to the 1800s, early times, there was a time when there was a very respectful and a very symbiotic, very connected relationship between the Black and the Chinese community. One of the things that was fascinating was to discover that the Black customers, neighbors, much preferred to shop and go to a Chinese grocery store because if they went to a white grocery store, they would have to use a separate entrance, and they were treated terribly, where they felt very respected, treated much better by the Chinese. And the Chinese, especially during the Great Depression, the Chinese grocery store owners actually extended credit to the members of the Black community there, and without any interest. And there was a very trusting relationship between the two communities that I think we can learn from today.
What's the impact of the 1882 Chinese Exclusion Act on your ancestors? And at that time, what kind of visa status do they have?
Yeah, so, I mean, that's an interesting question because most of my life, I didn't think anything of the Chinese Exclusion Act. Actually, I didn't even know anything about it. And all I knew is that I had no grandparents. I had no grandfather. And what we realized was that it was directly because of the Chinese Exclusion Act that I did not know my grandfather. That it was because of the Chinese Exclusion Act that my father never had a father to grow up with. It was the Chinese Exclusion Act that separated our family that was here in the U.S. 100 years ago, over 100 years ago. And that's what separated them from my father. And that's why it was so hard, even for multiple generations, to even be born here in the U.S. And it really took almost 100 years before I was able to be born here in the U.S. again, after my great-grandfather was initially born here. So before the 1882 Exclusion Act, there wasn't really visas. You know, it was kind of like an open system. Before Asians came to America, Americans went to Asia to get Asians, to bring them over. You know, it was like, you know, they needed Asians and Chinese for here, you know, to be laborers and other people too, other minority groups. They all brought them here to build this country. So it really wasn't until the 1882 Chinese Exclusion Act that these immigration policies set, and those policies were the ones that separated my family from my Chinese family in China from my American family here. For multiple generations.
Well, and it gets complicated because the Chinese Exclusion Act of 1882 was just one of many other subsequent immigration laws that were passed that prevented a lot of different people groups, even beyond Chinese, from coming to the United States and also attaining citizenship. And that was, you know, the biggest thing. And what we discovered is the fact that Baldwin's great-great-grandparents came before the 1882 Exclusion Act at some point. And then his great-grandfather, we discovered through our research, was born in the United States. And by derivative birthright citizenship, his grandfather was able to come to the United States. Where it gets complicated is his father should have been entitled to that same citizenship, but because of his grandfather passing early and because of the restrictive immigration laws, a special bill had to be passed by a senator and by Congress to allow his father to come in 1952. Because even after the Chinese Exclusion Act was repealed in 1943, there was still a quota of only 105 Chinese that were allowed in the country unless you fell into an exemption of being a scholar or a diplomat or a merchant, which his father was not any of those. So he ended up coming in under a special bill.
As the second or fourth generation Chinese American, please tell us how you see the current racial relations in America. Are Chinese Americans enjoying what American society offers as well as other races? And what are good and what may need to improve?
I think that's the complexity of being American. And I think most of us as Chinese and Asians, we want to be proud of being an American. And I think I am. I am very proud to be American. I'm very proud to be Chinese, and this environment is harsh right now. And I think there are definitely tensions between ethnic groups, and people can't tell the difference between a Chinese American of five, six generations or any Asian person of five, six generations here in America from maybe what the Chinese government is. But I think we are proud to be American, not because the past has been perfect or been good to us. I'm proud to be American because we in America have an opportunity to make things better. We can stand up. We can have a voice. We can have dialogues like this. We can create change. We can run for office. We can point out the things in America that has been flawed, is continued to be flawed right now, and we can actually do something about it. And I think that's the beauty of being an American, is having those opportunities to do that.
Well, and I think if you look at our community, over the generations, you know, take Baldwin's family from it, for instance. You know, they came in as poor laborers, and you know, eventually after several generations, they became merchants, and after several generations, you know, they were able to attain. You know, Baldwin's the first person in his family to go to university, graduate from a four-year university. And so there has been progress made, and a lot of the people from the Mississippi Delta, you know, were the first ones in their family to attend college. And, you know, you see that now where there is certainly a large proportion of Asians in the higher education system in America, because education is very important to our culture. You know, however, you look at other sectors, and we have not quite attained the same status or succeeded. Entertainment, where we work, for one, there's still a lot of missing stories and an exclusion and a lot of stereotypes that are still being, you know, perpetuated and in the media. You look at even our government and leadership in this country. We haven't had the same type of influence in the political realm. We don't have an Asian American president yet. You know, we have a lot of ways to go in terms of, you know, being in the upper echelons of, I think, of leadership or even influences. I mean, in education, we were great students, but our histories are not in the books. I mean, that's one thing we're very passionate. When you ask Americans today, like, name a prominent, you know, Asian American historical figure, you know, that isn't recent, very few people can even name one. Somebody will name like Bruce Lee, you know, who is just a martial artist, but, you
know, very good martial artist.
A very good martial artist.
From 50 years ago.
But there are so many people that are of even just Chinese descent. You think about Wong Kim Ark, who helped uphold the 14th Amendment's birthright citizenship. He took a case to the Supreme Court. Nobody knows who he is. There are so many other people, Dr. Mabel Lee, who was part of the women's suffrage movement that people do not know about. And yet, you know, our daughter goes to Mandarin Immersion School, and her teachers, who mostly are Chinese, and many of them from mainland China, they can tell you more about you know, the white historical figures and the black historical figures and even the Hispanic historical figures than they can about Asian historical figures in America. So that we have a long ways to go with in terms of where we are in enjoying some of the statuses and respect and feeling of belonging in America.
I actually don't know where we're going and where we're going.
Last thing I thought I'd ever find in Mississippi was a Chinese museum.
I guess there was more than just my grandfather and my great-grandfather.
When the Chinese first came to the Delta, they were treated like we were.
Everything was very segregated. I mean, it was black, white. We were just really in the middle.
I had to attend a segregated one-room schoolhouse.
Growing up, I read about segregation, and I thought that it only affected the black community.
I just didn't really think that it happened to the Chinese, too.
What?
Great-grandpa!
Oh, my God!
纽约市开放了最新的冒险体验项目，游客可以登上将近400米高的摩天大楼，进来纽约高楼层叠的景色。到达楼顶之后，在没有围栏、没有玻璃隔离的环境中，船悬垂在楼顶的边缘，欣赏这座著名城市的天际线。
If you don't think about it, it doesn't feel that bad.
Once we open to the general public, I think we're going to have a lot of people. We're going to have those urban explorers who are really just looking for something wonderful to do in New York City. We're also then going to have those people who really want to prove to themselves that they can overcome not only their fears or their hurdles. This is going to be a magnificent, life-changing experience for some people.
星期四是美国的感恩节，去年的新冠疫情限制了出行，很多人不能与家庭团聚，而今年有更多的人可以全家团聚来庆祝感恩节。节日期间，大家除了要吃火鸡大餐之外，还会观看橄榄球赛或者游行表演。那么游行之中最有代表性的就是纽约市梅西百货一年一度的感恩节大游行了，队伍中包括花车、乐队，还有表演者的表演和造型气球。那今天的节目到这里就结束了，感谢您的收看，祝您周末愉快。